everyone. You are listening to a bonus Disney Magic Hour podcast. This is our DMH book club review of The Princess Fugitive. This is Melissa, and I'm joined by Courtney. Hello, Courtney.
Hello, everybody.
And we're going to dive right in. This is our second book of the summer. It's the second book in this Four Kingdoms series. Again, it was written by, Melanie?
Melanie Cillier.
Yeah, okay. I always forget her name. Melanie Cillier. And this one, The Princess Fugitive, comes after the first one, The Princess Companion, which we had read earlier this summer. This book, The Princess Fugitive, is based, or is a retelling, they call it, of Little Red Riding Hood. So
sure.
I figure we'll kind of do like we had done last time, where we'll kind of talk about the original like source material of Little Red Riding Hood, just kind of give a breakdown of how that fairy tale has kind of been told, and then we'll get into this book and how it does its retelling of sorts. So Little Red Riding Hood, for the basics, we'll go into the basics because there's a few, like, you know, different variations, and as things went on, different authors decided to do different twists on it and stuff. But we all know Little Red Riding Hood is a young girl. She has she's wearing a red cape, a little Red Riding Hood. She's going into the forest bringing food to her sick grandmother. Along the way, she meets a big bad wolf who asks her where she's going. She naively tells him. He gets to the grandmother's cottage, eats the grandmother whole, then disguises himself as the grandmother so that when Red Riding Hood comes and he lets her in, they have that exchange that's pretty famous, you know, and she says, oh, you know, grandmother, you look different, and what big eyes you have, and better to see you with, and that whole bit. The wolf then does eat Red Riding Hood. In some versions, it goes on, it continues after that, where a woodcutter or a huntsman comes in and kills the wolf, is able to cut out Red Riding Hood and her grandmother from the wolf's stomach. And in some cases, then the huntsman fills the wolf's stomach with stones, and either the wolf dies because he can't lift himself up from the stones, or I've also read where the wolf is then drowned in a river. So, pretty morbid. The original like theme of all that is, you know, telling young village children, don't go into the forest, it's dangerous in there, you don't know what you're getting into. And of course, you know, the wild animals that can be a threat to young children in a village village setting. So is that what you found, Courtney?
Yeah. Same thing when I was looking up the history. I think the original story stopped with Red Riding Hood being eaten whole by the wolf, which is bleak. I guess like the moral of that is like just straight up don't go into the forest, or like the whole don't trust strangers thing, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's pretty dark, but you know, the variations, not much. You know, not much less dark, also very dark. They just result in the wolf also getting his in the end. So I think we have a little bit more of that in this story with the wolf getting his in the end.
Yeah. So we'll do a little setup of The Princess Fugitive because quite honestly, it doesn't really parallel the original fairy tale much at all. At least in The Princess Companion, we had a bit more of a parallel with The Princess and the Pea fairy tale. In this one, it's in the same, it is a series, so we do have some characters that have crossed over and some connections from The Princess Companion. So while you probably could read it standalone, I wouldn't recommend it because there's a lot of references to what had happened in the first book and a lot of characters that come up again where you had met them and maybe they have grown or changed or things like that. So kind of, you do need to read them in order.
I would agree with that too. I think, I mean, we're still so early in the series that you could definitely, they're quick reads. Mm-hmm. So you could definitely catch up and get to where we are in the series, but there's a lot of stuff we learn about characters from the first book and this one that, you know, further it. And I think there's context that you need from the first one for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Definitely context. So in this one, we had met Princess Eva in the first book. She was kind of our villain. Well, she was our villain in that one. We're going to follow her here. She is our quote-unquote Red Riding Hood, I guess. She has basically woken up in the beginning of the book to an assassin who is going to try and kill her. Her and her bodyguard Hans escape the castle. They escape to the woods. They meet up with a merchant train to try and get out of the city, the country, because it turns out, and of course, obviously, spoilers, it's her brother who has sent the assassin to kill her. The brother also successfully assassinated her father. And we find out that Eva now has to go back to Max and Alyssa, which we had really followed in the first book, and ask for their help in overthrowing her brother, and so that Eva can rule the kingdom instead of her brother. And the wolf in this story is a mixture. It's a mixture of the brother and Eva, and I thought that was odd.
I thought it was odd too. I think in the end, we're meant to believe that Max is the wolf, and or Max is the wolf. Corin is the wolf. Goodness, my brain. I think we're meant to believe that the brother is the wolf. Is that his name? Did I say his name wrong again?
I don't know. I never pronounced
it. Hold on. I have it. Let me find it. I'm saying Corin. I think that's a combination of Joran, and that's not his name at all. Goodness, what is his name? It's been a bit since we've read this, guys.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Conrad.
Conrad.
Conrad is the brother. So I think in the end, we're meant to believe that Conrad is the wolf, and that Eva has, like, based on her father's kind of training and installation of certain values in her, that she has the wolf within her, but she's fighting it off. So the idea of the wolf for sure is very unclear. And kind of transfers between both of the siblings. But I think it's supposed to be Conrad in the end that is the wolf.
Yeah. And I would have really liked if it wouldn't have been inside Eva, because I feel like it really muddied the retelling for me. And it kind of made the threat was also muddied, because Conrad sent the assassin for her and that was threatening. But then after that, it felt kind of weird. I didn't feel that he was this really terrible threat that was going to be successful in his attempt to get rid of Eva.
Yeah, and I think it's clear enough. I mean, he killed his father. He attempted to kill his sister and told the whole kingdom that he had killed her to basically just make the path clear for him to take the throne. So that is a very strong argument for him definitely being the wolf. So I don't know. I would love to talk to this author and hey, maybe we can get her on. That'd be cool. I'd love to talk to this author and find out kind of what her idea was behind having it be a part of both of them, because it definitely Conrad had the straightaway to just being the villain and being our wolf figure. So it was, I agree that it was confusing.
Yeah. I just felt like the threat of him wasn't as, I guess, strong as it could have been if it was just him, but I did like how Eva in this book did have a really good character arc. I really liked her redemption. How she did have to go back to Max and Alyssa and, beg for them, not only their forgiveness, but for their help. And of course, in Max and Alyssa, especially Alyssa's, they're true characters. They're willing to help, no big deal. But it was really hard for Eva to do that. So I appreciated her growth in this book. I felt like we got a lot more, I thought we just got a lot more character development overall in this book than we really got in the first book. And I don't know if that's just the author growing or if we just had more interesting characters, but I really liked not only Eva, a little bit of Hans, and even Ava's companions, Evelyn and Sarah. Evelyn, I think, had a little bit of growth, too.
Yeah, and we also have Matilda and her husband, whose name is also escaping me at this moment, and he's a big part of this book. Yes. One day I'll find that and let you know. There was definitely a lot more progression with the characters. I guess maybe that's just kind of a sequel thing. I don't know. We do get, generally speaking, with films, and I guess with books as well, we get more, you know, more exposition with, you know, finding out more about who the characters themselves are. So I think that kind of goes hand in hand with the sequel thing.
True.
But I do agree that the characters were just better written in this one. And I think that might be owing to the fact that there was less introduction to do. Again, I guess that's a first versus second kind of deal anyway. You have to introduce everybody in the first one, so you're learning basic stuff. And then once you already know them, then you get to learn the more interesting things.
Very true. Very true. I forget like how often that's the kind of like the rule with like, you know, first versus second kind of stuff. You have everything that's already established. And I guess that's the benefit of doing, you know, a series. You don't have to like reintroduce things, you know, it's already here.
Right. Matilda's husband is Aldrich, by the way. I found it.
Yeah. Matilda and Aldrich, I really have enjoyed their development. Like, we got a lot of Matilda in the first book, and I really like how she's grown, you know, from being that serving girl who was just, you know, flippantly in love with whoever, you know, hot other serving guy was around,
yeah,
to being like, you know, now she's a nurse and she's with a doctor and she's really helping people and, you know, doing a lot of heavy lifting, I think, in the books. I really enjoy her overall.
I do too. And I love that we got to see her be successful in, we definitely have seen a major arc with her, you know, from being just a, you know, a maid basically in the first book, and then seeing her get to learn how to like to be a part of medicine and to learn to be a nurse and then to succeed in like helping her friend in a medically related trial. And not only did she succeed in that trial, she kicked Conrad's, you know what, big time.
Yes.
In that trial, and it was awesome.
I really liked all of the female characters. I feel like, especially in this book, there was so many diverse female characters. It was, you know, we had like the princess, we had the nurse, we had the merchant daughter, we had the merchant daughter slash guard, you know, warrior kind of girl. So it was like a lot of different types of females and a lot of different jobs that they could do versus just like, okay, you're a princess, you're, you know, a maid or any, you know, just kind of clear cut lines like that. I really liked how they gave Ava help and supporting girl characters. And I liked how there was a lot of different dynamics, especially between Evelyn and Ava. I thought that it was really great how Evelyn, you know, wasn't quick to forgive Ava for kind of throwing Sarah to the, you know, the wolves or the guards. But yeah, how, you know, she kind of still was reserved with her, you know, forgiveness of Ava, and it really took Ava's working at it to win her back. And I did enjoy that a bit.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too. I guess I hadn't really thought about it in that way, and I'm glad we're talking about it now, because I don't think there were any straight up stereotypes of like female personalities in this book. Mm-hmm. I think there were variations on all those things, and, you know, seeing different personality types, that was interesting. Like Evelyn, I don't know that there are, you know, there's plenty of people and women who are quick to forgive. There's also just as many people and women who are not as quick to forgive and who don't have the, you know, flippant kind of Sarah style attitude about things, where you just say, okay, well, you were a jerk, I still like you, no big deal, as long as you give me one of your dresses to wear.
Yeah,
like, you know, there's so plenty easy of that. Yeah, there's plenty of that to go around, and I would say I fit more into that category. I'm not a holding grudges kind of person, but it was good to see variation of different personality types. And I guess the men in this one were more stereotyped. Hans was very like serious guard, and going along with that, he was also like, I mean, in my head, he was like a smoke show, you know, and very much so committed to his duties, protecting the princess, to me, that was like a straight up kind of character. Mm. I loved him, but it was a very stereotypical character. And then Conrad was, you know, the evil prince who's, you know, killing off his dad, trying to get rid of his sister, trying to take control of the kingdom, and basically not just the kingdom, you know, destroy nearby and take over nearby kingdoms as well. So I think we definitely got, I think that comes with the female author.
She's
aware of those things of, you know, maybe showing a different side of the female characters. I guess I hadn't thought about that, but that's very true.
Yeah. I guess, and like, you know, we do have like that third male in Aldrich, so he's like kind of our like neutral, you know, he's there to help. He offers his assistance both, you know, with the medicine and with, you know, his diplomatic insight, but he's not very, he's not one way or the other, you know, like he's not like.
Yeah, I think he was just like the intellectual of the group, I guess.
Yeah.
He was the brain. I think all the characters, regardless of whether or not, you know, they were a stereotype, they all had, you know, good things to read about. They all brought something good to the table. But I think the female characters were so well developed in this one.
Yeah, they were definitely better, I think, than the Princess Companion, for sure.
Yeah.
I really like them. I also really like the pacing of this book. I felt like with the first one, there was a lot of downtime for the characters, whereas this one, I always felt like there was something happening. And there was only really one part that got kind of slow, and it was in their preparation time for the trials that kind of got to be like, all right, you know, just get me back to the action, because I really like that. You know, they were doing really well with that. Like, I want to go back to that. And it really didn't take very long to get back there. But I did like how, you know, there was always something happening. There was always something going on. We were always moving, you know, the characters in this one, there was a lot of movement, a lot of different settings, a lot of different places that they had to be. It could have been a little, you know, you're questioning how far things are, maybe a little bit.
Right.
But I did enjoy how quickly it kept moving. How did you feel about Ava? Okay, well, let me backtrack before I ask you this question. Okay, so Ava, we remember from the first book, all princesses and princes have fairy godmothers. And Ava decides to ask her fairy godmother for assistance after the assassin tries to get her. And her fairy godmother basically says, no, you haven't been worthy enough for me to give you a hand. But the High King, you know, the one who's in charge of all the fairy godmothers, kind of intercedes and says, you know what, if Ava can find me, then I'll help her.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. But how did you feel about Ava's physical transformation, the need to kind of put her into, you know, dark hair or whatever?
I feel like it was an attempt at making her look average, and the way that they made her look average was giving her brown eyes and brown hair. I don't know if that was the best way to make her look average. You could have made her look different in any number of ways, but like choosing to just make her brown haired and brown eyed, I don't know that maybe made the best or portrayed the best message about, you know, a disguise. It just needed to be a disguise.
Yeah. And like, it was interesting because going back and looking at the original source material, there were a couple of references to the Red Riding Hood cape being magical, but it never really like had any powers that, you know, did anything in the original fairy tale. It would have been really cool because Ava did have a Red Riding Hood cape, like if that actually was then imbued with powers, and maybe like she look different to other people only when she was wearing that or something like that, where like you didn't necessarily have to do the whole like, no, we're gonna, you know, cause you to have dark hair and dark eyes and that's all trick everyone. It'll be like, you know, no, people will just not recognize you as the princess if you're wearing this cape. Like, because I even felt that the cape in this story didn't play a major part, and she like lost it halfway through anyway.
Yeah, it was useless. It was just something that she bought along the way.
Yeah.
She just picked it up and we were like, oh, she has a red cape now. So I guess here's the red cape portion. And then it didn't end up being, there was no importance to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I hadn't thought about the whole, you know, using it, I guess not an invisibility cloak, but like a disguise cloak. That would have been cool. Or if it had, you know, like you said, been magical and kind of helped her in, you know, finding the path to the High King. And, you know, also in regard to the High King, I think I said to you the week before we read the chapter where she found the High King that, like, what if basically this whole book is her trying to find the High King and then, like, that's the end and then the book ends. I was surprised that she found the High King so quickly and that I would have liked to spend more time there. I loved that chapter where they're describing that area and the godmothers and, you know, the majesty of the king and the place in which the king's castle is, I guess, the kingdom.
Yeah.
I loved that. I would have liked to spend more time there and maybe learn more about the High King. But I suspect the High King's going to come back in future books and we'll get more about that later on. But yeah, cloak was red cloak useless. It was just a way to tie it back, I guess.
Yeah. And like, I think in the beginning when she's fleeing, she has a red cloak from like the palace. I would have liked if they had referenced that as being like her grandmother's cloak or something, you know, to actually make it connect a little bit. And yeah, imbue that with powers. Don't make her be the wolf. Like, we don't need that. Like, the wolf is the external threat. Like, that's good enough, you know? Give Conrad more teeth, you know, and have him be the big villain. You know, Ava was such, I think, a good villain from the first book. Like, you could have really, it would have been really cool to see how much of a worse villain her brother was to her, you know?
Right. And I couldn't stand Ava in the first book. It took me probably 20 chapters into this book for me to like warm up to Ava in any capacity. Mm-hmm. I kept saying week after week when we're talking about this book, I'm like, I still don't like Ava, still don't like Ava. Nobody can change that quickly. I was just like over it. So that proves how bad a villain she was in the first one. So yeah, if Conrad had been that counterpart in this one, that would have been great. Also, why? I mean, what was the point of having the grandmother in the book? Again, I felt like it was another way to just connect it back to Little Red Riding Hood, but in a completely pointless way.
Yeah.
The only thing that grabbed on in any capacity from the original story, I think, was the wolf, but still that was confusing.
Yeah, it wasn't very clear. I mean, having the grandmother there in the back of Ava's mind to be kind of like her good side, I guess, you know, because it was always like the grandmother, once, you know, the mother passed away, couldn't stand the father and left, but it's like, it didn't do anything, you know, like she wasn't a driving force. There wasn't any like need to find her. Ava just assumed she was gone and there was never really an attempt to look for her. It wasn't even like, oh, I should try and find my grandmother. She'll help me in this instance. You know, there was nothing for that. And then she just pops back up in the end, is like, oh no, I was really in the city, like no big deal. And like that kind of annoyed me because I would have really have liked if she was like in the woods, you know?
Yeah.
Like if she had found her grandmother in the woods and found the High King's, you know, the entrance to his realm or something, like at the same time, like maybe that would have been interesting. But
yeah, there's any number of ways I think that it could have been more connected to the source material. I just felt that was so surprising because the first one was so connected to the source material and had cool little Easter eggs for us. And that, you know, Max's mom is Cinderella. And, you know, we have all these cool little things in the first story. So the source material was, I think, much more considered and integrated in the first one. And I didn't feel it at all in this one.
And I feel like the Red Riding Hood fairy tale is a bit more developed than the Princess and the Pea one. So I feel like to not have that much of it in the, you know, the retelling is odd because really there's not much you can do with the Princess and the Pea. It's the mattress, the pea, and the princess. Like, that's it. And like this one had a bit more and you could have really done a bit more with the whole, you know, threat of the wolf, the killing of the, or the, you know, the getting rid of the grandmother, the huntsman, woodsman, whatever. I really could have gone differently. But I did like this book overall a bit better than the first one. I really enjoyed the trials part of it. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, it reminded me of Sorcerer's Stone with all the different Harry Potter.
Oh, okay.
with all the different trials kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the same exact sort of lineup, but it gave me that same sort of feeling. And especially the one, this is a different Harry Potter, but there's, I connect everything back to Harry Potter, guys. So here we go. When they were in the library and mm-hmm. they're racing to find the door, that reminded me of the prophecies. Mm. When those are, you know, all the prophecies are falling and they're fighting the Death Eaters and all that. I mean, they're not really fighting anybody necessarily, but I drew those kinds of connections to it, but the trials were definitely the coolest part. And I think too, where we got a lot more information about people again in the trials. I think we learned a lot about people in that section of the book.
Yeah. I'm of two minds though with the trials. 'Cause like half of me is like, oh, well, Alyssa like barely did anything. And like she used her friends for all of them, but I did like that she was able to, I guess, humble herself enough to ask for help and like be willing to accept that her friends were there to help her. You know, I guess a good ruler is better if you are willing to accept help from, you know, the people who know better than you, which is good. But it frustrated me that even in like the one she had done, the knowledge one before the library with Conrad, that she lost that one too. And I was like, oh, she can't even win like two on her own, like she only has to win the one. And it was very like, I don't know, I got kind of annoyed.
I mean, it is a little frustrating, and especially when the one that she loses is the knowledge one. I don't know that she really lost that one. I think that it, because they basically like buzzed in at the same time, right? And then they like gave it to Conrad, so I didn't really take that as like a real loss. But yeah, you would think that she would need to be a little bit more, I guess, involved and have a more active spot in the whole winning of the trials to get the monarchy. But at that point, nobody wanted Conrad to be the king.
Yeah.
So really, we all kind of knew the direction that that the country wanted it to go in. So I don't know. I can kind of get over it. Alyssa found us the information saying that she only needed to win the one. She only had to compete in the two. So I'm good with it.
Yeah, it just kind of was disappointing. Like, I don't mind the champion. I was happy that, like, you know, Hans was able to be her champion for that. But then, like, the other ones, it was just kind of like, all right, you know, like, you could consult Matilda, but you could have given an answer. I would have hoped, like, Ava would have been able to give that answer. Or, you know, but I guess, you know, again, she needs to be able to consult other people and get their input you know, situations.
I'm not an expert on plagues, so there's no way if somebody asked me about how to prevent a plague from breaking out, I would be like, so I know that probably something to do with quarantine is involved here. But I would definitely put somebody on a bus next to somebody else who doesn't have the plague, though. Like, I wouldn't be very successful at that either. So I think that whole asking for help and, when you're in a position of power, if you're a queen, you're going to have advisors. You're going to have people that are experts in certain areas that you can count on to help you with specific things that you just don't know that much about. Yeah. She's supposed to know about politics and international relations, and like those are the areas in which she's supposed to shine. So I think it is a useful message that we should rely on people that are experts in their field for certain things.
Yeah, and then of course Conrad didn't rely on anybody and failed miserably. I think his answer was probably my favorite to that medical question, because it was kind of like, oh, that makes sense. Oh, and then here's all the ways that it goes terribly wrong.
Yeah.
That was kind of good. All right. So theme-wise, I feel like there are some pretty basic themes. Obviously, you know, having true friends, people who are willing to accept your apologies and accept your asking for forgiveness. If you're really truthful and honest with them, that people who are really your true friends will be the ones who will forgive you and will see that you are, you know, maybe a better person than you had initially come off as, and they're willing to, you know, stick by you and help you through your transformation and help you through your, you know, movement onto a better place in your life. So I really liked the whole friendship kind of theme in the book.
Yeah, there was definitely, and like we were talking about earlier, that you had different versions of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is gonna deal with your transformation the same way. You might have people who are gonna say, "Cool, you're trying to better yourself. You were kind of a jerk to me in the past. It's all good. If you're trying to be better, and I want you in my life. I forgive you. Great." And then you're going to have people like Evelyn who are going to say, let's see first.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we'll go from there. So it was good to see that, those friendships were going to be lasting friendships, but also that takes different manifestations.
Yeah. And some of them need a little bit more work than others. And you'll be able to, as long as you stick with, being truthful and honest, you'll be able to win people over.
Right.
So I did really like that. I don't know if it's a theme, but I just thought it was interesting how we kept going back to Ava's father and how his kind of expectations of her and her brother and how he wanted them to be and what he thought made a good ruler really influenced how they were, kind of growing up being and how they were acting and how, Ava was able to see like, just because my father was king doesn't mean he was doing it the right way and doesn't mean he knew everything. And I think we kind of can definitely get that from our parents. When we're younger, we think that our parents know everything and that their way is the right way. And then we grow up and kind of see more of the world. And we can either, we can draw our own conclusions. Is it the right way? Were we being taught correctly? Or is there a different way? How that can then shape you as an adult.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of autonomy is that, we can all make the decisions that we need to for ourselves, regardless of how we were raised. She had a dad who... I think a lot of girls fall into this category of, I don't want to disappoint my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely her thing. So instead of taking the more compassionate route that I guess we see her grandmother had and tried to instill in her, we see she turns her back on that and says, well, I don't want to disappoint my dad. So I'm going to do it his way. And, she doesn't really come upon it herself that that's the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
She still has someone else tell her. She has the High King tell her, and she learns from the godmother that she's doing things wrong. So it wasn't really a personal discovery until after. Once she's told, like, you can't be this way, then when she starts to change, she sees how other people around her respond to those changes. And that makes her personal journey begin, I guess. She sees that, I'm going to get better. I'm going to get better responses from people if I behave this way. And she starts doing things to like enrich people's lives just because she wants them to be happy. She wants to see Han smile. So she does things not for herself, but specifically for him.
Yeah.
Your parents are who they are and they instill certain values in you. And some of those are good. Some of those are bad. Yeah, that's kind of the cool thing about being a grown-up. You get to do whatever you want.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because we talk about grown-ups and then we talk about, like, these characters. And, like, they're all, like, 16, 17, 18. Like, they're still, quote-unquote,
right,
teenagers. But it's, like, it's funny how, like, back in the day, that's probably when you are being an adult. And, like, now it's, like, people take a little bit more time. But that's when you should start discovering, who you are as a person. And, like, it might take longer... for real people than characters, but that's fine. But as long as you get there, that's always the best part.
Right.
And of course, we do have, our love interest in this book. We talked a little bit about Hans. I thought he was a really interesting character because he was kind of like Max in the first book where he was in the background. I think we got a little bit more from Hans than we did Max. We obviously knew Hans had failings for Ava, and in both a protective way, a guardianship kind of way, but also a romantic way. I enjoyed the kind of tension that was between them a little bit, I thought it was a little bit more for them than it was for Max and Alyssa. But again, you know, the true love winning out overall was a fairy tale theme that stuck in this book.
Yeah, I have like mixed feelings about this because I'm going to just be straight about this. I love me a good like steamy romance novel. It's not something that I read a lot. Mm-hmm. I've read them and I think they're fun. Like if that's what I'm into, if I'm just, you know, chilling on a beach or I just need something that's just going to be totally mindless, I'm into that. I've read 50 Shades of Grey. It's not good writing, but it, like, it's just, it's fine. You know, it's just fine. So I kind of like that heat. Mm-hmm. There was definitely more heat between them, but there is something to be said for heat that is like that we get over lots of chapters before anything happens. And we got like physical between them real fast in this book. I mean, nothing, this is all like YA. So there's nothing serious that happens. I mean, at one point he does say that he can remember how she felt and tastes. So whoa, guys, watch out. But I would have liked a little bit more of, I don't know if a slow burn is the right word, because I think Max and Alyssa were a slow burn, but in a different way, like in a more like tender kind of way.
Yeah.
So I guess like I want to know that like heat is there, but I don't think we needed it so early on, because we got like moments of them just like having to touch each other several times in the book. Mm-hmm. Instead of like it culminating and coming to a head, it was just like lots of that interspersed.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting because like with the Max and Alyssa thing, like Alyssa was in denial of not only her feelings, but Max's feelings for her as well. Like almost the entire book, like there was no like, he loves me, I love him kind of thing. You know, it was just kind of like, oh, he's nice to me, or I really care for him. It was a weird thing. And like, it didn't like dawn on her until really late in the game that, you know, oh, we can actually be in love. Whereas with Ava and Hans, you know, it was clear that Hans had feelings for her. And Ava was the one who was kind of like, well, I do have feelings for him, but should I or can I, or, you know, what's to come of it, because he's still a guard and I'm a princess. You know, she has definitely a bit more of that, you know, logical head about her. But there was also that, you know, should I just give in to the temptation and let it go? So, yeah, it did lead to a lot of kind of like, you know, brief hot spots, if you want to call them that.
Right.
And then she would be the one who would kind of pull away because she was unsure of, you know, well, you know, maybe she was just unsure of like, she didn't want to lead him on because she knew, you know, that the way things go, you really can't do a royal with a non-royal. But that kind of seems to be obviously a theme that's going by the wayside.
Yeah, well, and you had both of those relationships, first mm-hmm. book and second book, you had, well, we can't be together. But in the first book, it was like, well, we can't be together, so this isn't even a consideration.
Yeah.
And in the second one, it was like, we can't be together, forbidden fruit. Mm-hmm. Like, and then it got steamy.
But yeah, it was fun because I felt like Hans had a bit more personality. Like there were times where he was, you know, laughing and teasing, and he would be, you know, a bit more interactive, I would say, than, yeah, you know, in the first book. And I really liked him. I thought he was fun.
Yeah, me too.
But so overall, definitely recommend the book. I really enjoy this series. I want to see where, you know, the rest of them go. I like the retellings so far. We kind of have like a half and half. The first one, I think, was a really good retelling of the fairy tale. And the second one, I think, lost itself a little bit in trying to do a bit more and not really following the original path like at all, to the extent where all of us in the group were really lost on how is this the Red Riding Hood story.
Right.
But next up we have just a novella. It's Happily Ever After's a reimagining of Snow White and Rose Red. I believe that follows the twins, but they're not the twins, the cousins, Sarah and Evelyn, but I'm not really sure. I didn't want to read too much into it before I finished the Princess Fugitive.
Right.
But I like where we're going with the kingdoms. I want to see how the other kingdoms kind of shape up, because we've had these two kingdoms that we've kind of, like, you know, had a pretty fair exposure to Ava's kingdom beforehand. But the other two kingdoms, the second one, I guess it's in the south, we, like, don't know at all. So I'm really interested to see where that one goes and what reimagining that goes along with.
Yeah, how many kingdoms do we have total?
Four.
Okay, so we've been through two.
Yeah. And okay. We kind of got, like, a touch of the one where Aldric's, like, the diplomat from.
Right.
And that was the princess that Alyssa really became, like, friends with as well. But that middle princess, she was, like, the ditzy one that one really got. So I'm really interested to see where that one goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really fun series. These, again, are not very serious reads. I think they're perfect summertime reads.
Mm-hmm.
And this author is still writing these. So I don't know how many books there are going to be.
Yeah.
But there's still plenty more for us to read. So those of you in the group, let us know how you're liking these, if you want to continue going on with this series, or if you want to do something different going forward. Your input is very valued. Just let us know how you're kind of feeling about the whole book club in general. Just, you know, we love your feedback. So let us know what you're thinking.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I know we did it as a summertime read, but I would kind of like to see where the rest of the Four Kingdoms series goes. I know there's, like, a second half beyond the Four Kingdoms. We might not go there, but just to kind of finish the Four Kingdoms, see where all those go. And then that might lead us maybe to the end of the year with the novellas, and then start next year with something else. Or if you want to go to something else before next year, definitely let us know. Remember, on Facebook, we have the group DMH Book Club. So if you search that, come join us. That's where we have our weekly discussions of the books that we're reading. And that's where we kind of figure out, vote on what we're going to do next. So we definitely appreciate you guys joining us there and having your input there. Otherwise, you can find us all on the Disney Magic Hour main group on Facebook. We also, of course, have our Patreon group. We have our live thread that we're doing monthly. This month, it's actually going to be tonight, so maybe it'll have already passed by the time you guys are hearing this. Depends how quickly I edit and post. But we are going to watch Infinity Wars. So if you want to watch movies with us and live chat in the group, you head over to patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour and find how you get that access. Otherwise, we're also on Twitter at DisMagicHourPod and on Instagram at DisneyMagicHourPodcast. And then we're always on Facebook and just chit-chatting. So until our next book and series, we will finish up our summer, enjoy our nice weather, and I'm going to go visit, well, Pete and I are going to go visit Courtney and Ryan up north a little bit for some Labor Day fun. So we'll see you guys shortly. All right. Have a wonderful weekend.
Bye.